Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
Texans like Donald Trump better than Ted Cruz, love football more than the rest of the country, and worry about the economy and immigration. Broadcasting this week from the studios of KUT in Austin, this is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Those are some of the results of a broad-ranging survey of opinions from around the state commissioned by the nonpartisan leadership group, the Texas Lyceum. 2015 marked the ninth year of the poll, which posed both open-ended and multiple-choice survey questions to English and Spanish-speaking respondents and revealed some interesting trends in the movement of public opinion on social issues. Joining us to talk about this year's results and what they suggest about life in the Lone Star State are two people who worked on the poll this year. Darren Shaw is professor in the Department of Government at UT. Jennifer Sarver is principal at the public relations and communications firm Sarver Strategies. You can find full results of the ninth annual Texas Lyceum poll at keranews.org. Jennifer and Darren, welcome to Think.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Full disclosure here, I am myself an alum of the Texas Lyceum, but for folks who are not familiar with the organization, tell us a little bit about the purpose of this annual poll and what the Lyceum is.
Sure. So the Texas Lyceum is celebrating its 35th anniversary this year, and we are a statewide leadership group, as you mentioned, nonpartisan, and we work to make sure that people in Texas have leadership pathways. So we try to find people who are interested in being leaders on both sides of the aisle, all different segments of the state and the economy, and do that kind of a year-long training program. You get in the Lyceum, you can serve for 3 years or 6 years, and one of the things we want to do as we train up these leaders is provide good data for them to make decisions when they become policymakers about the state. And so the poll really is a public service. We make it available for people in the media, for professors, for academics, anybody to use, because we want them to know what the public is thinking and what Texans are interested in. So the poll is really a public service that enables us to share a perspective on what Texans are doing.
What kinds of questions are asked every year, Darren, and how are new subjects added to reflect what's going on in any given year?
Well, I guess that we probably dedicate about a third of the sample, a third of the poll every year to what we call trend questions. And those are questions about the state of the economy in Texas, the national economy. We'll ask some questions about approval or disapproval of the job that the legislature is doing, the governor is doing, and things of that nature. And it's nice because you establish this sort of, since this is our ninth survey, we've got a decent trend. And in fact, the trend started right before the economic collapse of 2008. And so we have, you know, 07 was our first year, and then, you know, the numbers kind of crash in 2008, appraisals of how well the state is doing, how well the nation is doing. And we've kind of watched the trend since then. And that's one of the virtues of the poll, I think, is that you've got this nice sort of cross-sectional data that allows you to track opinion. And, you know, so for instance, we don't do it with all of our social issues, but every year, but we make an effort to track things like opinion on abortion, opinion on gay marriage, issues like that. And so we not only have the results for this cycle, but we also have some ability to look back and, you know, talk about dynamics, talk about how things are evolving.
The same-sex marriage responses were really interesting to me because, of course, Texas was one of those states that did not authorize same-sex marriage until the landmark Supreme Court ruling. And yet, according to the poll, 49% of Texans are in support of allowing same-sex couples to marry.
Right. This has been an interesting question to look at over time. When we started, we actually had a threefold response set of options on gay marriage. It was, you know, do you support gay marriage? Do you support civil unions but not gay marriage? Or do you oppose any kind of union or marriage, you know, entirely? And so there were, you know, it was tripartite, right? You had three particular options. And what we would do is tend to you know, combine responses, the first two responses. So we'd say, well, you know, 60% of Texans are okay with some sort of recognition of union between gays and lesbians. But over the last year or so, in particular in light of the Supreme Court decision, the conversation has changed such that the question we ask now is just support or oppose gay marriage. And so this is, we have trend data on it, but this is actually, I believe, the first time we've asked thumbs up or thumbs down on gay marriage. And, you know, as you said, we're not quite at a majority, but there's a plurality and close to majority in support of gay marriage. Again, that's amongst adult Texans, which, you know, a lot of people have had a talk about, well, would it be different amongst likely voters or registered voters only? And actually, the numbers aren't that distinct. The adult population, which tends to be more Hispanic, younger, et cetera, you know, is a little ambivalent on this as well. There's some things that push them in favor of gay marriage, like youth, a lot of millennials. But then there's a conservative element to the Hispanic population that kind of muddies it up a little bit. So we've seen a little bit of movement over time to the extent that you can compare those two slightly different questions.
Can you talk? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it just brings up one of the reasons why we do the poll and we pick hot topics. You know, right. We knew after the Supreme Court decision, it would be interesting for us to be able to ask this question. We believe we're the first poll to ask that question statewide. And so it was an important marker for us to be able to say, this is a discussion that's happening nationally. Let's hear what Texans have to think about it. And so we, as a Lyceum, sit around and think about what are the issues that are top of mind in the state and why? What are people talking about and what kind of data can we give our lawmakers to help them as they go through the policymaking process.
Yeah, it's Jim was sort of suggesting one of the things we try to do, we mentioned one third is given to trend. At least a third kind of depends on whether it's an election year or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in on years, we tend to have a significant amount of election instrumentation. But in off years, we really work to put together questions on public policy issues that are not only topical, as Jim suggests, but occasionally will fit with the public policy emphases that the Lyceum has. So the Lyceum has quarterly meetings. Each one is dedicated to a particular public policy area. And so, you know, last year, what did we do, Jen? We did, we had an economic development one.
Yeah, this year's meeting, economic development. We also talked about, our meeting in August was about the war on drugs. Have we won the war on drugs was the question. And so this marijuana question stemmed from that because we were interested to see where Texans' opinions were on that issue. So we both polled to issues that we've been talking about, but also looking ahead to the future, like football, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit here in a minute.
Well, let's talk about legalizing marijuana. And this is not all illicit drugs, but marijuana was on the survey. Big surprise, at least to me, 46% of Texans surveyed were supportive of legalizing marijuana. And of those who said, no, don't legalize, 57% still said, decriminalize.
Right. We decided we were going to have two questions on pot this time around. The first was a criminalization question, as you mentioned, or a decriminalization question. But the second was we wanted to probe a little bit, for those who supported keeping it illegal, what they thought about the penalties associated with it. And in part, this reflects the discussion at the legislative session last time around. So as you mentioned, we did get 50% who said they oppose legalization, but 46% of Texas adults said they would support legalizing the use of marijuana. So we're not quite at 50-50, but much closer than I had guessed or would have estimated, I guess, prior to the poll. And then we went ahead and asked the 50% who said, it needs to be illegal. We don't want to change the law. What do you think about, and I think the explicit question wording was reducing the maximum punishment for possessing small amounts of marijuana to a citation and a fine.
So no jail time.
Right, exactly. So that was and that wording was intentionally designed to capture what was being talked about in the legislative session. And as you said, you got 57% said they would support decriminalization. Right, so no jail time. So even amongst the half who really wants to keep pot illegal, a solid majority of those said, responded to what I think is the elite conversation concerning what we ought to be doing on, with respect to penalties on pot.
Yeah, this is certainly an issue that we found very interesting. We had some very enlightening conversations over our August meeting. And as we look to national conversations on this and what are people talking about and social justice and criminal justice issues, I found it interesting that, at our meeting and our discussions, it didn't break along partisan lines either. Even in the legislative session, as Darren suggested, we did pass legalization of using marijuana for parents who have kids with uncontrollable epileptic seizures, for example. Now, Governor Abbott has said that he's not for legalizing pot, but other Republican leaders have come out and said, let's look at it, let's discuss it. And I think that surprised some Texans during the legislative session. So that's one of the things we wanted to probe a little bit more when we had the opportunity to talk to Texans about this issue.
This is a study like with hash oil for these kids.
Yes,
is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It is refreshing to find an issue that doesn't break evenly along partisan lines, isn't it? You just want to keep talking and talking about it.
Once in a while, we get those issues. And it's, I think Darren's talked a lot about this in some of our interviews about the poll, is that Texas is not a homogenous state. There's a tendency to try to put everybody in a box.
Yeah.
And there are very loud voices on one side of the aisle or the other that say that. But I think our polls show some really interesting perspectives on issues like climate change, for example, and issues of football. Of course, we're actually pretty united on football on both sides of the aisle, so that wasn't too surprising. But we found it refreshing that there was some diversity of opinion.
Yeah, I do think on the pot question in particular, what you're seeing amongst Republicans is a little bit of a response to the conversation you see amongst some of the leading Republicans in the legislature with respect to criminalization, since they dominate you know, the committees are associated with criminal justice, and they've basically been the ones who have said, you know, there needs to be some sort of reform. We can't continue to sort of incarcerate and tie up the legal system with some of these cases. So I think in some sense what you're seeing is a reflection of, you know, the dissensus that exists within the Republican leadership on exactly what should we be doing here. So I think that's true, by the way, across several of these issues, but you see it most notably, I guess, on decriminalization.
Another interesting area of, I guess, bipartisan unity to some extent was the question of Texans' approval of the Texas legislature's decision to spend $800 million on border security over the next 2 years. How did respondents feel about that?
Well, we asked two immigration questions. Actually, you could say one is a border security and one's an immigration question. And so as you suggested, the immigration question was essentially, how do you feel about spending $800 million on border security operations over the next 2 years? So again, it was a direct attempt to kind of get at what the ledge is doing. And we had 62% approved of that. And there was also a question about how effective you think it'll be. And people seem to think it would, you know, be pretty effective. We also asked a question, so that's sort of the border security side of it. We also asked a question about it's not a pathway to citizenship, it's more of sort of a dreamers question. We wanted to get at that. We've asked questions that are basically pathway to citizenship questions in Texas a couple of cycles in a row. This time we wanted to ask more explicitly about kind of the DREAM Act and where attitudes in Texas are on that. So we asked about, do you approve or disapprove the federal government's decision to halt the deportations of undocumented immigrant youth who attend college or serve in the military while providing them with a work permit, right? So it's essentially a, you know, kind of a Texas expression of the Dreamers Act. And we found 65% of Texans said they approve of the federal government's decision not to go after those kids. And, you know, so I think this is something we've seen consistently throughout the tenure of the Lyceum poll. Republicans want to talk about border security, and there's a lot of reason they should, right? They are on, you know, the correct side of public opinion when it comes to border security. Correct meaning majority. Democrats want to talk about pathway to citizenship and what to do, you know, with people who are here, who are undocumented. And there's a reason for that, too. I mean, I'm sure there are genuine empathetic reasons, but they're on the correct side of public opinion with respect to that element of the issue. You know, people want a pathway to citizenship, we found, in Texas. And they also think it's fair that, you know, you're talking about two-thirds of people supporting some version, basically, of a DREAM Act. So, you know, it's not surprising to me that both sides seem to talk past each other on this issue.
Well, it seems like language is an issue, though, because there's the phrase pathway to citizenship. There's the phrase, you know, you can just sort of explain what the measure might do, or you can call it amnesty, which is a word that really, you know, gets a lot of people excited on either side. You have to be careful crafting these questions.
Well, that's right. Well, it goes even to the fundamental nature of the question. I mean, if I told you how many hours we spent on whether it's undocumented workers, undocumented individuals, undocumented workers, illegal immigrants, you know, these sorts of conversations, which I think people's eyes glaze over maybe as they're listening.
Not journalists, but yeah.
But I mean, I teach, basically, we talk about this for half an hour in my class on public opinion. What is appropriate? And it's not, I think some people think, well, it's a matter of political correctness. No, you want to get it right. Words matter. And we've actually tested a lot of these different options. You know, if you use illegal immigrant versus undocumented worker, how does that affect the results of the poll? And we've seen there are 3 or 4 point differences depending on small question wording effects like that. So, you know, we try to do the best we can and, you know, to use the term of art that is sort of most acceptable, most appropriate, and honestly, this is underrated. It's clearest to people as well.
We're going to take a quick break here from our discussion about the 2015 Texas Lyceum poll. My guests are Jaron Shaw, who is professor in the Department of Government at UT, and Jennifer Sarver, principal at the public relations and communications firm Sarver Strategies. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, call 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can take courses in art, architecture, history, literature, and more. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
From the studios of KUT in Austin this week, this is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about the results of the 2015 Texas Lyceum Poll. My guests are Jennifer Sarver of Sarver Strategies and Darren Shaw, professor in the Department of Government at UT. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email think@kera.org or you can call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372. Jennifer, you were telling me that an upcoming Lyceum meeting will be talking about immigration. It's an issue that's come up before for the Lyceum, but it seems to be different every couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Right before the break, we were talking about how these words matter, whether we're talking about undocumented or illegal, or we're talking about a pathway to citizenship or amnesty. And it really just highlights the problem of what happens when we boil our public policy down to bumper sticker slogans. And what the Lyceum does is try to strip that back and say, let's have a detailed conversation. Let's have an informative and insightful conversation and lively debate. And let's give our directors some hands-on experience with these issues. So next August, we're going to be going down to the border for a meeting on immigration. And we're going to go on Border Patrol ride-alongs. We're going to look at the fence. We're going to look at some of the security measures. But then we're also going to go to detention centers and visit with families and see the crisis firsthand. And so our members, regardless of what side of the aisle they sit on, will get the opportunity to see up close and personal the people these policies impact. And we find that really has an impact on people. It might not change their opinion on an issue, but it certainly makes them better informed. And if they're going to be leaders diving into public policy, that's what we want, is informed and enlightened people who are willing to sit down and have a discussion with both sides of the aisle.
The thing that, of course, impacts every family everywhere is the economy. The numbers of Texans who say this is the most important issue in the nation, they've fallen pretty steadily since 2008, when 62% surveyed put the economy first. I was surprised, though, lots of people still have serious concerns about unemployment, which is a little bit unusual given that the unemployment rate for the state is 4.1%.
Right. We ask two open-ended questions every cycle. What do you think is the most important issue facing the country? And parallel question for the state. And the distinction between the two has really been kind of interesting over time. Nationally, this time around, you're right, as the economy recedes a little bit from the front pages of the news, other issues percolate up to the top. And so you get a mishmash, a little hodgepodge of all these different issues. But it's still the economy leading the way, but it's 16% as opposed to, you know, 35 or 40%, which is what it was in 2008 and 2009. We distinguish, again, since this is open-ended, we actually distinguish between the economy, as I mentioned, versus jobs and unemployment. If you add those two together, 16% say the economy is the most important problem facing the nation. Another 7% say unemployment, jobs. So if you add those two together, and I think it's reasonable to do that, you know, you end up with about a quarter of people saying, you know, basically the economy is still the most important issue. But at the state level, even during the height of the recession, we were getting a ton of people saying immigration and illegal immigration and border security. And as the economy has kind of faded a little bit, immigration and border security have kind of reasserted their importance at the state level. So for instance, immigration is the number one mention on important issues facing the state. 24% say immigration. Another 5% say border security. So almost 30% now list that as the top issue, set of issues facing the state. Comparatively, unemployment, jobs, 7%. And the economy actually falls down a little further. So it's under 10% saying the economy is the most important issue facing the state of Texas, which, as we said, we've done this 9 times now. It surprises me every time.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, Texas has an unemployment rate of 4.1%, which is down from 4.8%, which is, you know, fantastic when you look across the board nationally. Yet Texans' kind of opinion on the economy was fairly stagnant. And does that mean that they're just happy with where they are and they're highlighting issues that are being highlighted perhaps in the presidential race and they're referring to those issues? It's very interesting, though, to see that they don't have a super strong opinion of our state economy, even though things in Texas look really good. And so it raises questions about what are people focused on? What are they worried about? What is the anxiety that they might have about the economy in the future?
A question I really like that we've been doing consistently is, do you think Texas economy is better off, worse off, or the same as the rest of the country? And at the recession, there was a huge difference between perceptions of Texas versus the rest of the country. Even today, 52% say we're better off than the rest of the country. 28% say the same. Only 14% think Texas is worse off than the rest of the country. And I would also say we ask an optimism question every cycle. You know, looking ahead to the future, do you think your children will be better off than you, worse off, or about the same? Better off is 40%, about the same 22%, worse off 27%. And this is distinct in Texas compared to the nation. for the first time nationally, those numbers are underwater. People think their kids are going to be worse off. That's not true here.
It's sort of a spirit of Texas exceptionalism.
Yeah, I think it is.
The whole country is keenly aware of racial tensions and divisions at this moment in our history, and I would imagine that, this series of questions is one of the topical set for this year. In part, this is due to the fact that video cameras make stories about alleged law enforcement abuses hard to ignore, even if we can argue over the content of those and what actually happened. What did you learn about Texans' perception of racial discrimination by police?
We've been wanting to ask this question for a number of years now, actually, and with the events in Ferguson and in New York and in other places, we thought it would be and actually some instances obviously here at home in Texas, we thought it would be an appropriate time to ask a couple of questions about discrimination. So we asked a pair of questions. We were really interested in looking at the racial breakdown. So the paired items, the first one is, was there ever a specific instance in which you felt discriminated against by the police because of your racial or ethnic background? And 83% said no. Overall, but 17% said yes. And if you look at the numbers by race, you'll find that African Americans and Hispanics were obviously, I think, pretty expectedly, significantly more likely to say that they had felt some element of discrimination. The numbers are close to 50% for African Americans. The second question that we paired, was there ever a specific instance in which you felt discriminated against by an employer or a potential employer because of your racial or ethnic background? Again, 78% said no, 22% said yes, and the racial divide here is also enormous. In fact, it's even more, a higher percentage of racial ethnic minorities, Hispanics, African Americans, felt that an employer or potential employer had discriminated against them because of their race or ethnicity. So, and these numbers are consistent with national numbers, although I don't know that I've seen many instances in which they've broken it out by Hispanic, African American, and white. It's usually just black and white, and your subsamples tend to be pretty small. But, you know, because the Lyceum has a pretty sizable percentage of Hispanic respondents, you know, we can actually make those comparisons with a decent amount of confidence. So those numbers were interesting to me, and I think will be subject of quite a bit of conversation at the Lyceum in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this definitely was an issue that we wanted to address, especially after issues this summer. And for us to find out, not surprisingly, your experience with discrimination depends a lot on the color of your skin. And certainly, it's one of the things that we look at the Lyceum is making sure that our members are diverse so that we can talk about issues like this and sometimes painful issues and hard issues, but we bring a diverse perspective to it. And this kind of data informs those discussions.
What is your sense of how we can have fruitful discussions when it's so clear that perceptions are very different? And I don't know if you were to ask, you know, do you know someone of another race who's been discriminated against in employment or by the police? Maybe you would have gotten an interesting series of responses. But it's pretty clear that depending on where you come from, you see and experience things very differently.
Yeah, it's a tough issue. I mean, and there's a knee-jerk reaction sometimes, I think, on both sides of an issue to respond when there's an incident and to say it doesn't happen or that it's being overblown. And I think I can think of instances where I have friends that were discriminated against because of this color of their skin. And I want to be able to have an honest conversation about that. The problem is it doesn't seem to be very many places where those conversations are encouraged and where people can come together and have conversations without walls and without a dividing line, a partisan dividing line down the middle. And that's what we hope to be, is one of those places where those walls are torn down.
Darren, what does it take to get a survey sample that more or less reflects the diversity of Texas? And like, there's a lot of ways you can define diversity, right? There's age and there's socioeconomic background and there's race and there's education level. How did you decide which ones were most important for this survey?
Texas is a particularly difficult state to survey. This is a survey conducted via traditional live interviewers contacting people via telephone. So the sampling technique is sort of the traditional probability sample. So it's an adult population that we're looking to represent. And so what you aim for are the census figures. In fact, this is one thing that makes it somewhat easier, or at least you have a target that you're shooting for. Texas is now less than 50% the adult population, less than 50% white. It's on the order of 38% Hispanic, depending upon whether you believe the census estimates for 2015 are accurate or not. About 11, 12, 13% African American, right? And the remainder, people who increasingly register themselves as mixed race or other when they're asked to list their race or ethnicity. So there's a large cell phone population. Our estimates are there's 40 to 45% of the population is cell phone dominant. So either say they will only do you know, they only have a cell phone or strongly prefer to use a cell phone. You know, so we have to get that segment of the population. And so what you need is a random, what we call a random digit dial technique. Everybody with a landline has roughly an equal probability of being selected. And then you need a cell phone supplement that basically approximates that procedure as well.
For all the people who've killed the landline at home.
Exactly. And I've asked this question to my students the last three or four semesters, and I've had about 600 students. I've had two of them say they had a landline.
Wow.
In the last couple of semesters. So in addition, you have a large Hispanic population and an Asian population, which is not necessarily English fluent. So the Lyceum has a Spanish language interviewers and a bilingual instrument that we employ. We tend to leave the survey in the field a long time, called a slow burn. And we repeatedly call back people who have actually been selected through the randomization processes. Probably badger them a little bit, but you know, the idea is that you want to reduce what we call response biases. That is, you know, burning through sample because people that you've chosen, you can't find, or you know, you can't get a hold of to complete a sample. And you know, the more of that you have, the more possibility you have for problems of representativeness.
Is there any bias that comes from the fact that there's the kind of person who thinks, oh, I can't wait to respond to this lengthy survey about my thoughts and opinions, and then there's a certain kind of person who feels it's intrusive, even if it's not, you know, personal in any way?
Yes. We've gone from about 20, 25 years ago, the response rates to the national surveys were in the high 20s or low 30s. That is to say, out of, you know, you contact 1,000 people, 300 of them would agree to do the interview. Nowadays, response rates are down even in the very strong, reputable national surveys, NBC, Wall Street Journal, ABC, Washington Post, you know, Gallup. You're down below 10% response rates. Pew did a wonderful study a couple of years ago, I think it was in 2012, looking at, you know, well, what happened, you know, what's the consequence of this? And what they concluded, and I think this is probably right, is that there aren't any real strong demographic biases. There aren't any strong real partisan biases. What you find is that the people who were willing to do a survey for you are more engaged, more interested, higher levels of involvement. And so what your survey ends up doing is not inflating Democratic or Republican percentages. It ends up inflating the extent to which people are paying attention to politics and are engaged with public affairs. That tends to be the most consequential bias. Right? So with respect to opinion, and I think that's true of all polls. I think it's disingenuous for pollsters to suggest that's not the case. I think you probably have an inflation. You know, somebody, as you suggest, who's willing to sit down and do a 20-minute, you know, survey is not necessarily a representative individual for the population these days. And you know, we do, by the way, obviously weight the survey so that we're achieving, getting back to your original question, gender, age, race, region, education targets. We do not weight by partisanship. Party identification is an attitude. It's not a demographic. Right? This was a big issue in 2012. If people happen to wake up feeling Republican on a particular morning, as long as our demographics are correctly ascribed, we're confident in the sample, we kind of allow that to flow.
And of course, in Texas, you can vote in one primary or another per election, but you don't have to declare a party affiliation.
No. And it is important, though. We will list, for instance, in the survey, if you go to the back tabs, party identification. That's what people identify themselves as. Not the same as registration, which is, it doesn't exist. There's no party registration in Texas. You know, it's not how you vote. It's an attitude. And it does help you kind of, you know, we like to run everything by party, of course. You know, take a look at these splits. But we don't wait by party.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Jennifer, you brought up football earlier. And
She always does.
I can't help myself, especially after a big game last week in Dallas, which I won't mention.
Yes, we're well aware of the results of that game. This is an area in which Texas really is different than the rest of the country.
Quite strikingly so, and in a way that brings us all together. Now, next year, as our public conference, so the Lyceum does three quarterly meetings and one public conference where we invite the public in to join us, we're going to be talking about the big business of football in Texas, and we're going to be on the campus of TCU in Fort Worth, neutral territory. And we're going to be talking about the economics. We're going to talk about the health aspects. We're going to talk about violence against women. We're going to talk about ethics and all of the various issues that come with sports. And so we wanted to ask a couple of questions specifically about this. And I think Darren's been itching for years to ask a question about football. But we basically wanted to understand, with kind of the ongoing conversation about safety issues and concussions and impact studies that show, you know, kids are getting hurt early on, would Texans encourage their kids to play football, even knowing all these things? And not surprisingly, 72% of those polled said they would encourage children to play football, while only 21% they said they would discourage it. And this kind of parallels a national poll that asked a similar question, and 40% of Americans would steer their children away. So while the rest of the country is telling their kids, no, let's not do this, it could be damaging, Texans are still pretty full force for their football. And we're excited to tackle that a little bit at our meeting, excuse the pun, but really talk about it from a health and safety standpoint and understand more about why Texans have that opinion.
You've heard about the gender gap. We call this the football gap. It's about a 20-point football gap from living in Texas, and I'm wholly supportive of this.
So is there reason to believe that these numbers will change as time goes by? Is Texas just lagging behind maybe the national trend that finds at least a larger percentage of parents a little bit concerned about their kids playing?
I have no idea. You know, it's nice to have a baseline, yeah. Right? So we have this number moving forward. We did drill down and ask people, you know, those who said they would encourage their kids, why? And those who would discourage their kids, we asked them why as well. And, you know, what we found amongst the people who said they'd encourage it was that 38%, this is the top response, said it builds character and discipline. And 19% said it keeps them out of trouble. 15% said team sports are important. 13% said exercise. So sort of a wide range of reasons for supporting football. Amongst those who said they would discourage their kids, 71% said the chance of injury. So, you know, on the eve of, I guess, Will Smith is coming out with a movie about concussions, mm-hmm. that the NFL, from what I understand, is very concerned about or interested in. That I guess, would be the one element of this issue or conversation that we probably want to keep an eye on.
We're going to take a pause right now. Our guest, Darren Shaw, has a class to teach across the UT campus, so we will say goodbye and thank you very much to him. And we'll be back in just a minute with Jennifer Sarver from Sarver Strategies. We're talking about the results of the 2015 Texas Lyceum poll. If you want to be part of the conversation, call 800-933-5372, email think@kera.org, or find me on Twitter. I'm at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can take courses in art, architecture, history, literature, and more. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
From the studios of KUT in Austin, this is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour about the 2015 Texas Lyceum poll with Jennifer Sarver, principal at the public relations and communications firm Sarver Strategies and a Lyceum alum. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. I want to talk about climate change. Some really interesting information here about what Texans are thinking about and in what capacity.
Yeah, we asked a couple of questions about this. And the specific question we asked was, how much do you personally worry about global warming or climate change? And we asked them to characterize that: a great deal, a fair amount, only a little, or not at all. And the overall analysis is global warming is not a top concern for Texans. When we asked if they personally worry about it, only 50% said only a little or not at all. What was really surprising to us was when we went to the next question and asked, would you support or oppose Congress passing new legislation that would regulate energy output from private companies in an attempt to reduce global warming? We got 40% people said strongly support that. 60% overall would support such regulation. So 67% would strongly support or somewhat support, which really surprised us.
For a state with a huge energy industry.
Absolutely. And usually, you know, our pollsters tell us when you use the word regulate, you get a very strong reaction. But we said, you know, would you use regulate energy output from private companies? And people were supportive of that. So it's very interesting to us. And again, I think just another example of where Texans' opinions might not be exactly where you assume they would be.
Among people who told you their Christian denomination was Catholic, Catholics were most concerned about climate change of all Christian Texans.
Yeah, that was interesting. And it's a good example of why we ask those demographic questions. Now, this poll, we did this poll before the Pope visited, but he had come out earlier in the year with his paper and his statement on climate change. And so it was interesting to us that when we asked that question, Catholics among Christians were the most likely to express their own concerns about global climate change. Only 39% of Protestants and 42% of other Christians say that they worried a great deal about it, but 60% of Texas Catholics worried about it. And so it was interesting to us that it's become a faith value amongst Catholics, and you have to wonder if that's driven by the Pope's conversation around this. And it'd be interesting to see if post his visit to the U.S., where that was a topic of conversation in front of a joint session of Congress, how that would change even further.
We're still a long way out from even the primary elections, but Republican Texans who are thinking about who they might vote for right now, support for Donald Trump outnumbers support for Ted Cruz, our junior senator.
Yeah, it was interesting to us. So the way we do the Lyceum poll is we ask, you know, the policy issues and we ask some political issues. And so the first day we came out with our results on the top issues facing Texas. And the second day we talked about politics. And it was a surprise to us. But Trump leads in Texas. That's a 21-16 lead over Ted Cruz, our senator. And I would just add as an aside, Ted Cruz is actually an alum of the Texas Lyceum. So that pipeline of leadership works in some extent. but yeah, Trump came first and then Cruz and then Ben Carson. And so we asked the question, because there's so many candidates still in the field, we asked the question, who would be your second choice for president? And then we heard 37% of Trump's voters would support Ted Cruz, 24% would support Carson.
Was the poll taken after former Governor Perry had left the race?
We were in the field when he left. So he was still on our questions, but he had left kind of the first week in, and Scott Walker left the second week in. The pollsters have looked at the numbers and didn't impact. Their percentage of support was so small it didn't impact within a margin of error the results overall.
I have a question via Twitter from Kay, who wants to know if there were any interesting conclusions about education. Was there a lot about education in this year's poll?
No, it wasn't a topic that we addressed in the poll, and that's one of the challenges. You know, we talked a little bit about these long poll questions, and so we always try to get it between 15 and 20 minutes, otherwise you're just going to lose people. And so we wanted to hit on a couple of the other issues, so we didn't ask about education this year.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act, because there were some interesting responses here. This is always a complex question year after year, because there was the passage of the Affordable Care Act, and then there was implementation, and now we've had the law in place for a while. What were the responses?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, in this year's poll, a slightly higher percentage of Texans expressed a favorable attitude toward the Affordable Care Act, lovingly called Obamacare by many, than those did in 2014. So it showed an uptick from 37% in 2015. It was 33% in 2014. So it begs the question, I think, for some people about the longer the law is entrenched, does it become more favorable? Do people have a more favorable reaction to it? I think another interesting question, we asked people about their insurance coverage. And we, you know, Texas is known for having high percentage of uninsured. And so we wanted to know what type of health insurance people had that we polled. And results to this question kind of indicated a slight downward trajectory in the percentage of Texans stating that they did not have health insurance. Mm-hmm. So one can see that there's a slight increase in favorability of the Affordable Care Act, while there's also a slight increase in coverage. And so whether those two things are linked or not is a question for the data crunchers, but it is an interesting perspective overall.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to the phones now. We have Judy on the line in Dallas. Hi, Judy.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I was just commenting earlier. I mean, there's so many great topics right now. I could comment on almost all of them, oddly enough. But the thing is concussions. My son just actually, he plays football in a local school, and he's in ninth grade. And he suffered his second concussion. Game of his. Yeah, exactly. But we pulled him out, but he was actually pulling himself out. Oddly enough, he had done a research paper year prior regarding the NFL and their whole concussion, you know, suit settlement. But it was just interesting because apparently some of the coaches weren't so thrilled with some of the trainers being a little bit conservative on, you know, said issue. And I just find it interesting that I'm not from Texas, so the whole love affair with football is sort of foreign to me. My husband did play in high school, and he said even he remembers friends of his not remembering the game. I mean, you know, not that that's a good thing, but, you know, I think it's good that we've come this far understanding the impact of head injuries.
Yeah, Judy, thank you so much for your call. Football is something, as we talked about earlier, we just think about it in a different way in Texas.
We really do, and it's interesting. It's one of the reasons we wanted to do our public conference on football, frankly, because of these kind of layered opinions and attitudes. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how it changes officiating in Texas, coaching, training, I mean, parents getting more actively involved, the healthcare community standing up and saying there are things that we need to do differently. I think there also is a parallel discussion about advancements in safety technology. Are there things we can be doing to not just detect concussions? There's a lot of research into detecting concussions, but what kind of equipment can we use to prevent concussions? And so there's the equipment side of things, and how do we do that differently? But then also, how do we play the game differently? While it's getting harder and faster and more aggressive, certainly at the college and NFL level, these kids are getting trained from Pop Warner on up to be, you know, to look at these football heroes. And how can we say, you know, how can we tell them early on, let's play the game differently? Let's not play it so aggressively or so hard hitting if that is a reason, is a way that we can tamp down concussions. And I think there's going to be incumbent on the NFL and those heroes that these kids look up to say it's important to play safe, not always to play hard. And that's, you know, as a football fan myself and the sister of three brothers, I know that that's a tough discussion, but I think it's going to have to be a wide ranging and diverse discussion that is, you know, to Judy's point, not just about the people on the sidelines and the trainers saying this is a problem, but the coaches have to agree it's a problem, parents, school officials, and people have to be willing to pull kids out of a game, even if it means losing the game, because it means saving them from health problems later on.
It seems a strange segue to go from football back to the Democratic primary, presidential primary, but what did the poll reveal about what Texans are thinking who might be inclined to vote Democratic?
Well, I know today is the Democratic debate, and they don't have enough people on stage to field a football team, so there's a nice segue for you. The Republicans did with a slight bench.
Yeah.
But here's what we found on the Democratic side. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton leads the Democratic field. I don't think that's a surprise by anybody. 36%. Bernie Sanders had 24%. Joe Biden, 15%. And Jim Webb, 2%. And Joe Biden isn't yet a declared candidate, though I understand there's an empty podium waiting for him this evening. When we looked at the head-to-heads in Texas, so we looked ahead and said, okay, so if Clinton versus Jeb Bush or Clinton versus Marco Rubio, what would that look like? And it was interesting that Clinton trails Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, and Donald Trump, but she would be ahead of Marco Rubio by 7 points, which we thought was kind of interesting. And Darren actually said this, but he thinks it's really, you know, she polls better in Texas than you would expect, but he thinks it's because of high name recognition and really the divisiveness of the GOP contest at this stage.
What did you learn about how people feel about Governor Abbott's performance so far?
You know, we don't know if we're one of the first to ask this question, but we did ask about Governor Abbott's job approval rating. And 56% of likely voters approve of the job that Governor Abbott is doing. It shows, and the poll, we also asked the question of President Obama, and it actually showed, interestingly, an 8% bump in approval ratings for President Obama compared to last year's poll. So 52% of respondents said that he's doing a very good job or somewhat good job.
Is that actually higher than the national approval rating for President
Obama? I think
it is.
I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I think it is slightly higher, which we found to be pretty interesting. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Governor Abbott is also an alum of the Texas Lyceum.
They're everywhere.
Yes.
What do you think? I mean, you know, looking at all this, there's a lot that maybe we are surprised by about ourselves in Texas. There's also, there are a lot of things that people from outside the state think they know about what Texas is that may not reflect the diversity of opinions and the kinds of people that we have in the state and the many ways that we express ourselves and live our lives as Texans.
Well, I think this poll helps show that Texas is really a whole other country. For those people who didn't know it, we were a country at one point in time, and we hold on to that very dearly, and we hold our opinions very deeply. And I think the interesting thing about our poll is that we do ask questions of adult Texans, not just registered voters. So you are going to see a slight difference in who's being elected and who what people's opinions are. And so I think what this poll shows me is that Texans have a lot of complex opinions. We have strong opinions on a lot of issues. But it does show that we need to increase voter participation. I think one of the tough things for me as somebody who's very interested in civic engagement and really encouraging participation is that, according to a recent survey, Texas was dead last in voter participation. And so the amount of people that are coming out to elect Republicans and Democrats, it's very small. So people are ceding control of government and policymaking to a small group of people. So I hope any poll would show this, but the importance of people getting involved and making their voices heard, not just on a survey, but on election day, is really critical. And that's, again, one of the reasons why the Lyceum makes this poll available. We want to make sure that people can use it, can look at these data, can help them inform public education campaigns and voter education campaigns, because we think it's so important for Texans to get out, to get involved, and to make sure they're making their voices heard.
If you had to take a stab at it, what do you think accounts for low civic engagement in Texas? That's sort of disappointing.
Yeah, it is disappointing. We're here at KUT, right next door to the Annette Strauss Institute for Civic Life, which did a survey called the Texas Civic Health Index a couple of years ago that looked at a lot of measures of civic engagement, everything from involvement in a church or parish, involvement in organizations, voter registration, speaking out, talking to lawmakers on issues. So really measuring all these different ways in which people can get engaged. And there are a lot of reasons why people don't get involved. And certainly one of them is in Texas, obviously, we've had a dominant party for a long time. There's some people that feel that their voice won't be heard or their voice won't make a difference. Certainly there are policies that some feel impact people's ability to get involved and make their voice heard. I think it's interesting, too, for me as a communicator, when you look at the media, a lot of media, NPR and Think and KERA aside, are very biased and partisan. And people go to the places where they already know their voice is going to be, they're going to agree with the voices.
They're going to hear
radio.
A reflection
exactly.
of what they think. Yeah.
And so if you're never hearing any dissent, if you're never hearing any opposing viewpoint, you continue down that path. And I think it's so important to make people come back together and say, listen, again, I might not disagree. I might not agree with you after we have a conversation, but at least I understand you a little bit better. And so people have to be willing to lay down their guard and have those conversations. And bipartisanship and consensus shouldn't be dirty words.
We know that candidates love polls, but they love polls that say how they're doing, as opposed to necessarily polls that look at, you know, the way that voters feel about issues. Have you found lawmakers interested in the results of this?
Certainly. We've seen a little bit of interest. We expect that we'll hear more as the elections heat up. And certainly the legislative session, we hope this is a tool for legislators each year. I think definitely there have been groups that have come out in regards to, for marijuana, for example. There's pro-legalization groups and anti-legalization groups that have come out and used our poll to create their own news around why this is an important topic that should be discussed. So I expect that there are third-party groups that will use this to advocate with lawmakers. And I think lawmakers will certainly look at it as they make public policy decisions. I know the interim charges are out and people are starting to look at what's going to be discussed in the 2017 legislature. And we hope that our poll is a tool for those lawmakers and something that they can use.
Jennifer Sarver is principal at the public relations and communications firm Sarver Strategies and an alum of the Texas Lyceum. You can find the full results of the 9th annual Texas Lyceum poll online at texaslyceum.org. Jennifer, thank you so much for making this time for us.
Thanks, Chris. I had a blast. I appreciate it.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phones today from Gus Contreras, and our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. Once again, from the studios of KUT, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.